top five anything just gives me anxiety, to be very honest with you. Yeah. That I'm like,
what's up, list nerds? Welcome to this Force 5 mini episode. I am your host, Jason Kleberg. On today's show, we're going to talk about what car chases Devendra Hardawar and I missed on last week's show, which was top 5 city set car chases. We're going to talk about some of the things I've been watching. And then we're going to end with a review of the 1994 Sinbad film, Shazam. Last week, Devendra Hardawar, co-host of the Filmcast and senior editor over at Engadget, was on to talk about car chases. And chase cars, we did. But we are, of course, limited to 5 choices, and with so many different amazing car chases out there, the internet was quick to let us know what we missed.
Not in the top 5, did they get it right?
Excuse my language.
Okay.
Hell no! I can't believe! Who made that list? Who made that? That's blasphemous!
Don't look at me!
That's blasphemous!
Over on Twitter, at Ravensfilm said, I'd like to throw in the car chase from Lethal Weapon 4. This thing is insane with practical stunts with shit you don't see happen anymore. It's been a long time since I've seen Lethal Weapon 4. I need to pull that one off the shelf. I got the Lethal Weapon collection up there somewhere. Big Lou LFD said, we got a tank full of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark and we're wearing sunglasses. He's of course talking about the Blues Brothers, which is basically one big car chase. Cater and Bliss said, not necessarily the best, but the pre-credits sequence from Quantum of Solace is superb for its sound design. The Aston Martin roars like a lion as it tears down those twisty roads. JSackick99 said, To Live and Die in LA, directed by William Friedkin. Yeah, that car chase is amazing. Eyeball Tourist said, Spy Who Loved Me from 1977. Lotus Esprit S1 against a motorcycle with a missile, a Cortina full of Jaws, a helicopter gunship with a supermodel pilot and several submarines. Excellent camera work and editing still make this a blast to view. Call Me McCready said, as a kid it was Condor Man. I have not seen Condor Man. European Dimes and Eric Holmes, friend of the show and fellow cinematic, both said The Way of the Gun. Telarium said, technically it's a motorcycle and semi-truck, but The Dark Knight. Nobody Cares 2022 said The Rock racing through San Francisco. I Like Stuff 2022. They both had 2022 in their names. The chase scene in The Matrix Reloaded is one of my favorites. And DF Smitty 0711 said that opening chase from the first Transporter film was pretty fun. All right, this week I saw a couple of things. First up, I finished Mr. and Mrs. Smith. This is on Amazon Prime. It is an 8-episode series. It's a lot of fun. I love where the series is headed. I hope we get more of it. The finale was really great, and it set up a whole new angle if they do decide to do season 2. Look, it's everything that you want out of a relationship-based spy show. It's got globetrotting, it's got car chases, it's got shootouts, it's got bombs going off, it's got bickering, and it's got an engaging, budding relationship at the center of it. I really do recommend Mr. and Mrs. Smith. You can find that on Amazon Prime right now. Another TV show that my wife and I checked out just out of morbid curiosity, based on a review that Dave Chen over at the Filmcast had put out there. It is a show that you can find on HBO Max, or Max, the one to watch for HBO, whatever you call it now. It is called Naked Attraction. Now, when I was little, there was this show called The Love Connection, and you had a contestant that was there trying to get a date, and there were people behind, like, they were behind something, but you couldn't see them, and she would ask questions like, what would your dream date be? And then she'd listen to those answers. Oh, my dream date would be picking apples in an orchard and then going to a nice dinner afterwards. And then contestant two would say, oh, my ideal date would be going to Amoeba Records and buying some cool Blu-rays. And then based on whoever's answers she liked the most, that person would come out, reveal themselves, and then we'd see them go on that date. Naked Attraction is a lot like that. There's people behind these blockades, and they get the contestant out there, and they talk a little bit, and then the host says, let's see those cocks. And they raise it up, and the people are naked behind there, and all you get to see is the waist down. I mean, we're talking full frontal. And then she needs to eliminate one based on the site of their D&B. And then they eliminate one, and then the gate goes up a little bit higher, so you see like armpits or neck down, and she eliminates one more, and it just keeps going like that, and eventually the contestant that's there for a date is also butt naked. For a show that has so much nudity, it is honestly one of the most horrific things I've ever seen. My wife and I watched one episode. I don't know that we'll watch more. Certainly would not recommend watching this while you're eating. It's one of these shows that I would recommend couples watch once just because it's so strange. And there's been so many different spinoffs in different countries. So this thing is popular. The one on Max is, I believe, from the UK. And man, they do show the date afterwards and it is awkward. That's Naked Attraction. You can find that on Max, the one to watch for HBO. I also got to see a sneak peek of a film called Sting. This one releases April 12th wide. I got to go see a preview screening of this, and IMDb lists the plot as, after raising an unnervingly talented spider in secret, 12-year-old Charlotte must face the facts about her pet and fight for her family's survival when the once charming creature rapidly transforms into a giant flesh-eating monster. I gotta tell you, this feels like a creature feature that will be this generation's Critters. One of those films young people watch at sleepovers, get scared as hell during, and then grow up citing it as one of their favorites, only to rewatch it as adults and kind of laugh at those things that they used to be scared of before they pass it down to their kids. And despite my criticisms of its clear budget limitations, it's a pretty good time at the movies. The crowd I was with seemed to really like it, and hearing gasps when a spider is crawling into somebody's mouth is wild. Why we go to the movies in the first place. I rated this one 3.5 stars on Letterboxd. If you like monster movies, go and see Sting when it comes out April 12th, and go and see it with a crowd, because it's going to be a lot of fun for you. I also checked out a Chilean film from 2023 called The Settlers. This is one that I had heard a lot about. I had heard it was the closest thing that you're going to see to Blood Meridian on screen, so I really wanted to check this out. It takes place in Chile in 1901, and three horsemen are paid to protect a vast estate. So they're going to go on a little journey. It's a British soldier and an American mercenary named Bill. And they pick up one more guy, a mixed-race sniper, who realizes that his true mission is to kill the indigenous population. This is a slow-moving, but very brutal, incredibly bleak movie with a really haunting final shot. If you were interested in the story behind The Killers of the Flower Moon, I think this is a really solid follow-up. It's a slow burn, but it's got some really great moments. And it is a haunting film. It is not an easy watch, but I do recommend it. This is The Settlers from 2023. It's sometimes subtitled. There's a couple of different languages spoken throughout the movie, but really, really solid movie. You can find this on Mubi right now, M-U-B-I. That's The Settlers from 2023. Okay, let's go ahead and talk Sinbad and Shazam. Back in the 90s, my brother and I, in our infinite wisdom, decided that Shazam was the cinematic masterpiece we simply had to experience in the theater. I'm sure that my mom braced herself for an hour and a half of eye rolling so intense she probably feared they may stick that way. And I felt similarly when my kid asked to get the VHS tape at our most recent Amoeba visit, but it was $1 and made him happy. And I still have a working VCR, so apparently it was time to revisit this gem from my and so many other people's childhood. Now, before I get further, I'm going to call out once again, this is not the DC Universe's Shazam. This is Shazam starring the comedian Sinbad from 1994. Shazam unfolds the tale of two siblings, played by Jonathan Brandis and Emily Perkins, who stumble upon Shazam, a clumsy genie with a flair for the dramatic and an outdated sense of fashion. What follows are wish-fueled escapades impeded only by the kid's imagination and the emergence of an evil genie named Mordecai. Now, the wishes are the thing that you're going to want to watch this movie for. The first wish brings forth the world's largest ice cream cone. Amidst my chuckling at just how bad it looked with the 1994 technology, it was a sweet reminder of the messes we find ourselves in when desires override common sense. The second wish's venture into a video game world made me understand why I liked this flick as a kid. A true Nick Arcade kind of sequence, but with a much bigger budget. But as our intrepid heroes navigated their pixelated peril, I found myself leaning in captivated as it cleverly critiqued our escapism and reminded me that facing reality, no matter how tempting a digital retreat might be, holds the truest adventure. And the grand finale, a wish for a communal haven in the form of a revitalized park, caught me off guard with its sincerity. In a stroke of genius, or perhaps luck, the children's selfless act unveils a deeper magic, the transformation of space and spirit alike. The reveal that this act of kindness would liberate Shazam from his lamp-bound servitude certainly made me wonder if this or Aladdin was released first, because the themes are certainly similar. Turns out Shazam's a delightful romp through fantasy that cleverly mirrors our reality, seasoned with enough humor to keep even the most cantankerous of viewers chuckling. It's a reminder that magic doesn't just lie in grand gestures, but in the laughter shared in old VHS tapes, the shared glances of disbelief, and the unanimous agreement that maybe, just maybe, the world outside isn't so devoid of enchantment after all. I'm sure when I was younger, I took the whole Echo riddle finale at face value, but as an adult, I feel like I finally understand it. An echo only exists as a response. It has no substance of its own, just as selfish desires often leave no lasting good or legacy. It speaks without a mouth, hears without ears, highlighting the importance of listening and responding to the needs of others, not just projecting one's own desires. The kids learn that, like an echo, true magic and happiness are found in the responses we create in the world, through acts of kindness and selflessness. It's not the loudness of one's wishes, but the echoes that they leave in the hearts of others. And they use that final wish to restore the park, an act that benefits their community and creates a lasting echo of joy and togetherness, in stark contrast to Mordecai's selfish desires for freedom and power. So, should you find yourself with an afternoon to spare, a six-year-old to entertain, and a little bit of a reminder that wonder hasn't vacated this world, Shazam delivers. And who knows, you might just leave the film with a spring in your step, a smile on your face, and a suspicious craving for ice cream. For some reason, I could not find this movie on Letterboxd, but you know what? If I could, I'd give it 5 stars. So that's Sinbad and the 1994 film Shazam. And that about buttons up episode 143 of the Force 5 podcast. Make sure to join me next week as I welcome Jericho Ridge filmmaker Will Gilby as we talk top 5 badass female protagonists.